The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Now, how about a note from the Jason Burmester, Chief Content Officer at Reader's Digest. Spring is in the air, but this year it feels different. Like many families, we filled the last 2 years of the pandemic with movie marathons, game nights, and long hikes. Now life feels as if it is slowly, carefully, and open again. While I'm ready for whatever the new normal looks like, I don't want to lose these activities. Family game night and Sunday hikes are here to stay in our household. I'm not the only one who discovered a positive side to quarantine. We asked for your thoughts and were overwhelmed with stories of the ways we found a bright side on these tough times. You can read some of our favorites in Pandemic Silver Linings on page 84, which we will get to eventually. Elsewhere, we looked at the families who got out of the house and headed to the Great Smoky Mountains to see the dazzling light show created by rare fireflies. Of course, there's no one better to talk about the great outdoors than legendary conservationist Jane Goodall. She writes about finding hope in nature in her excerpt of her latest, The Book of Hope. This issue is much about resilience as it is about hope. And I survived, we hear from people forced to fight for their lives in incredible situations, from being swallowed by a whale to trapped in quicksand. We also talk to brave nurses who are struggling to care on after the past 2 years in a healthcare system that's been pushed to the brink. We've also introduced a new section, the RD List, where we'll talk about books, movies, and more. Consider it a place to find recommendations for family movie night or your book club, which, fingers crossed, will soon return to meeting in person for the first time in a long time. Now let's see if we can continue to learn something unusually new. What is umami? U-M-A-M-I. Exactly. You know sweet, salty, sour, and bitter, but do you know what umami is? What is umami? Since the beginning of time, food lovers have sought out unique flavors and perfected ways to introduce them to others, even in infancies. While babies can't identify salty taste until they're about 4 months old, human taste buds are routinely replenished until about the age of 30. By the time we reach 40, our taste preferences are fully established, yet despite spending decades tasting a full array of flavors, most of us barely remember there's a fifth flavor profile. And when we do remember, we're often scratching our heads wondering, what is umami? And it's interesting because I was watching the Food Channel the other night for the show Chopped, and one of the chefs happens to mention creating umami. Most Western traditions identify four basic flavors, sweet, sour, salty, and bitter. You've known about those since you were young enough to blow your allowance on Sour Patch Kids. But Japanese traditions include another taste. This is recently popularized fifth flavor is known as umami. Read on to learn what umami is, what it tastes like, and where to find it in your favorite dishes. And then they have a graphic here that shows pictures with the different things. They show sweet being chocolates, sour being a lemon, salty being a pretzel, bitter being coffee, and umami is mushrooms. It's found naturally in foods such as seaweed, miso, kimchi, soy sauce, oyster sauce, dried shiitake mushrooms, and of all things, Parmesan cheese. What's the history of umami? As far back as the Roman Empire, people have been cooking up ways to add fishy, salty, savory flavor to their foods. Archaeological excavations have revealed at least four different kinds of fish sauces used by Romans in pursuit of what we now call umami. The ancient Japanese tradition of making katsuobushi, a smoked and dried fish that's an essential part of Japanese cuisine, has the same end goal. But though this mysterious flavor had been known for centuries, it wasn't identified until 1908 when Japanese researcher Kukuane Akita isolated the taste. Akita was trying to understand what gave his wife's soups their unique flavor. Over the course of his experiments, he arrived at the specific taste molecule, pointing to the monosodium version of glutamate that was present in the brown kelp she used to flavor her stock. It was a familiar flavor. He thought, like meat, dried fish, or katsuobushi, Akita temporarily termed it umami, the Japanese word for savoriness, and the name stuck. The finding not have been groundbreaking at the time. It certainly wasn't in the United States. Akita's research wasn't translated into English until 2002. But in hindsight, it was a major breakthrough. It paved the way for umami to be recognized as a fifth taste factor. What gives umami its flavor? Just as you think sugar when you think about sweetness, food experts think about glutamate when considering umami. Glutamate is an amino acid, a building block of protein. Two components come together to create umami, monosodium glutamate, MSG, and disodium isonate, IMP. These don't have much flavor on their own, but they enhance umami flavors in food. Synthetic butuse MSG is also called Ajinomoto. It's a white flaky substance, and the MSG flavor is described as salty. Most purists don't use it, but it can be convenient for those who have time or ingredient constraints. What does umami taste like? It's one thing to answer, what is umami? It's an easy question. The harder question, what does umami taste like? Food scientists and researchers have long struggled to describe the exact taste, settling for descriptions like savory, meaty, or broth-like. Less of a struggle, however, has been determining umami's effect on our sense of taste. For instance, many scientists believe that the umami flavor lingers longer on our taste buds than other flavors, and that this quality makes umami more desirable. In fact, one study found that the addition of umami-bearing substances reduced the desire for saltiness in foods. Interestingly, too much umami can overshadow everything else and make a dish feel too salty or even soapy. Food historian and scholar Ken Abala has experimented with making katsuobushi from scratch to understand the flavor better. Umami is actually several different chemicals, often acting in concert, he says. Arriving at a perfect balance of flavor molecules creates the mysterious umami taste. How do you cook with umami? The first step in creating an umami-rich dish is to use quality ingredients that have developed the glutamate and associated chemicals that contribute to umami, says Chef Eric Wincoop, director of the Culinary Instruction for the Rooks Bay Online Culinary School. Sure, you can make katsuobushi from scratch to make umami, flavoring yourself, but it's a labor-intensive dish, and you can buy the ingredient online and in most supermarkets. While ready-to-use synthetic Ajinomoto is available, some folks do not like the MSG taste. Once you've collected your ingredients, you can incorporate them into a wide variety of dishes. Our suggestion, start by whipping up some Japanese-inspired dishes, which make use of a bunch of umami-rich foods. Umami, whether from kombu, seaweed, MSG, or a combination of soy sauce, mirin, sake, and salt, is the foundational flavor profile of a lot of Japanese cuisine, says Gil Azakawa, a cultural consultant and chair of the Denver Takayama Sister Committee. We've rounded up the foods that pack the greatest umami punch. As you browse, look for ways to combine them in your favorite dishes. Food traditions from cultures like India and Japan believed in layering flavors to create complex and more enjoyable dishes. When umami is introduced through the layering of ingredients and in balance with the other taste, the meal is perceived as having depth and providing satisfaction, Wincoop adds. Seaweed. Glutamate content, 250 to 3,800 milligrams of glutamate per 100 grams. As Akita's original source of experimentation, brown kelp, a type of seaweed, contains the glutamate that gives umami its characteristic flavor. Also known as kombu, edible seaweed's glutamate content differs by variety. With mahkombu containing more than 3,000 milligrams of glutamate in 100 grams of seaweed, and rishikombu contains 2,000 milligrams. Dried seaweed is soaked briefly in warm water to release the umami-inducing flavors. The water is then used to make stock. It can be tricky to properly extract the umami without muddying the flavor. According to Elizabeth Ando, author and Tokyo-based culinary instructor at the Taste of Culture, you can delicately extract the best umami from kombu when the water is 60 degrees Fahrenheit. But if the water gets warmer than 85 degrees, it becomes bitter and slimy. Ugh. Dried shiitake mushrooms. Glutamate content is 1,060 milligrams of glutamate per 100 grams. A popular additive in many Asian stir-fry dishes, dried shiitake mushrooms pack a lot of umami. That's not the case for all mushrooms. Truffles, for instance, only have between 60 and 80 milligrams of umami per 100 grams. Mushrooms are very easy to incorporate in any dish, are very forgiving toward novice cooks. They're basically impossible to overcook, and offer a meaty taste and texture without the meat. It is believed that in Buddhist temples where meat is not consumed, daishi, fish broth made with from dried bonito, is created using dry shiitake mushrooms. Soy sauce. Glutamate content, 400 to 1,700 milligrams of glutamate per 100 grams. Fermented products like soy sauce are loaded with umami and can really play up the flavors in a dish. It's a go-to ingredient for stir-fries, a wonderful base for marinades, and an ever-present side for sushi and sashimi. Some people prefer a Korean soy sauce, while others may choose between Chinese or Japanese soy sauce or tamari. All are great, as they all offer lots of umami flavor. Parmesan cheese. Glutamate content, 1,200 to 1,400 milligrams of glutamate per 100 grams. Strong taste in cheeses like Parmesan. It can take anywhere from 18 to 36 months for the flavor to develop, or high in glutamate, which means lots of umami taste. It's easy to work this ingredient into your favorite meals. Top pasta with freshly grated Parmesan, or sprinkle the cheese over chicken or in a healthy salad. For umami flavor, try Emmentaler, a Swiss cheese with 310 milligrams of glutamate, or trade your American cheese for cheddar, which has 180 milligrams. And then there's oyster sauce. Glutamate content is 900 milligrams per glutamate per 100 grams. Foodies who love Asian culture will recognize this flavorful fermented sauce made from oysters. It's rich and flavorful, importing an umami taste to everything from stir-fried broccoli and eggplant to beef, chicken, and fish. Miso. Glutamate content 100 milligrams of glutamate per 100 grams. Like soy sauce, seaweed, and wasabi, miso is a Japanese staple. It's a food paste made from fermented soybeans and adds depths of flavor and a salty, savory taste to food. It's the key ingredient in miso soup, naturally, but you can also use it in dressings, marinades, and even dishes like a sweet potato casserole. Kimchi. Glutamate content is 94 milligrams of glutamate per 100 grams. This Korean dish of salted and fermented cabbage and vegetables is another fantastic way to enjoy umami. Bonus, because it's high in digestive enzymes, it's good for your gut. Kimchi is often included in the banchan course, a collection of Korean side dishes to stimulate the palate and encourage diners to create their own variations on the dishes they will enjoy. According to the Umami Information Center, kimchi that's made using napa cabbage yields the highest amount of glutamate. And if you've ever had kimchi, it's really an interesting dish. You really have to develop a taste bud for it. I'm fortunate since I've been in Korea and actually had some kimchi from a small village that where they make their own, and boy, that was something. All right, speaking of flavor, how about the secret ingredient behind the addictive flavor of McDonald's French fries? Ooh, that must have umami too. There's one ingredient in McDonald's fries that makes them so dang addictive, and it's not the salt. Find out what really punches up their flavor. There are matchstick fries, steak fries, crinkle-cut fries, and waffle fries, cheese fries, and sweet potato fries. But among all the rest, McDonald's French fries are the old standby. There's something about the flavor that we just can't stop eating, similar to how we can't seem to resist McDonald's Coke, Sprite, or chicken nuggets. And no, it's not just in your head that these fast food fries are one of the most addictive foods. One secret ingredient keeps you coming back for more. But before we reveal it, let's take a step back and talk about the food facts surrounding the ingredients of McDonald's fries ingredients. What are McDonald's French fries made of? Fresh potatoes are washed, peeled, cut, and blanched to make McDonald's fries, according to a video from the company. The factory they're made in also adds chemicals to keep the potatoes a uniform light yellow color, but no, that's not behind their addictive flavor. And after that, the cut potatoes are fried for less than a minute before getting frozen and sent to McDonald's locations. At the restaurant, those frozen strips are cooked in oil and salt before landing on your tray in that red box. How many ingredients are in McDonald's French fries? Who hasn't been curious about the McDonald's fries ingredients? According to McDonald's, their signature fries are made with 10 ingredients: potatoes, vegetable oil, canola oil, corn oil, soybean oil, hydrogenated soybean oil, natural beef flavor, which contains wheat and milk derivatives, dextrose, sodium acid phosphate, pyrophosphate, salt. What makes McDonald's French fries taste so good? It all started in the 1950s when the shortening company that gave McDonald's vegetable oil couldn't afford the equipment needed to hydrogenate the oil, which would extend its shelf life. So the supplier gave a blend of oil and beef fat instead, according to NBR. Over time, McDonald's and other fast food joints made the beef fat part of their signature fry flavors. But in the 1980s, fast food restaurants took the ingredient out when the health advocates criticized how much bad saturated fat it added. McDonald's wanted to keep its signature beefy flavor, but without the beef fat itself, so it came up with a solution. Now the fast food chain adds natural beef flavor to its vegetable oil to give its fries their irresistibly meaty taste. Are McDonald's French fries vegan? In the United States, McDonald's French fries are not vegan because the natural beef flavor is made with milk derivatives. However, if you cross the pond in the United Kingdom, the fries, or chips as they're called in UK, are vegan since they're not made with that beef flavor or coated in any animal substance. Okay, now that we're all hungry for McDonald's, fries, or umami, let's switch subjects and go to your true stories in 100 words. It's a lot. I owned an auto repair shop in a small town in Wisconsin. People would drop off their cars for repairs outside of business hours and then pick them up later in the day. One morning I came to work to find a customer's car with a note sitting on the driver's seat. The note said, "Lloyd, I hid the keys under the seat." Sure enough, there they were hidden for anyone who read the note to find. Lloyd Chase. Words on the street. I have a friend from Germany, but we both now live in Oregon. When my friend was a newcomer, she did a lot of shopping downtown. She had a habit of writing down the name of the street where she parked. One day she called me frantic, saying she had walked for almost half an hour and couldn't find her car. "There are so many streets with the same name," she said. Dubious, I asked her to tell me the street name. In her heavy German accent, she said, "Wadwey!" Maybe you can put a price on it. My 6-year-old daughter, Rona, listened intently as the speaker at our church told of the hardships people endured in the country where she was ministering. It was the day after Rona's birthday, and her grandmother had given her some money. When the offering basket came around, Rona reached into a pocket, pulled out her birthday money, and put it in the basket. "Your grandmother wanted you to use that to buy something nice for yourself." "I did," said Rona, replied with a big smile. "I brought happiness." Oh, that's sweet. Best pet pals, Bella and her butterflies. One summer day, the bushes in our backyard began whimpering and whining and making all sorts of commotion. Or rather, our pit bull mix, Bella, was in the bushes whimpering and whining and making all sorts of commotion. Our 11-year-old daughter, Caitlin, discovered her sniffing and pawing at a branch where several caterpillars munched away. My husband and I worried that our backyard, frequent hangout of birds, squirrels, and neighboring cats, wasn't a safe environment for vulnerable caterpillars. So we got a butterfly house where the caterpillars could safely metamorphose. Each day when we took the butterfly house to the backyard, Bella moved with it. Each night when we brought it inside, Bella followed, then slept under the table on which it rested. We don't know why Bella was so attached, but she was there for every step of the budding butterfly's transformation. Finally, the caterpillars turned into beautiful monarch butterflies. Surprisingly, Bella didn't seem worried when Caitlin released him. In fact, Bella seemed to understand that this was part of the cycle. It wasn't until one last butterfly wouldn't fly away that Bella expressed concern. She gently rested her head near the reluctant flower, which crawled under her nose. Bella lifted her head, pointed her nose, and let out one of those breathy dog sighs. Off the monarch fluttered, seemingly needing a little push from a friend to begin her migration. Life in these United States. Aging. What's the alternative? I never felt older than when my 9-year-old son said, "It must have been interesting being alive in the 1900s. Oh, I can relate to that. I stopped referring to my parents as elderly after someone told me, "Well, they'd have to be now, wouldn't they?" I was complaining to my father about the horrors of turning 50. He replied, "No, what's worse than turning 50? Having your kid turn 50. That shut me up. I was very pregnant when my husband and I visited our OBGYN for a routine appointment. When the doctor noticed that the baby's heart rate was slow, he decided that I should be induced. Or as my husband, for whom English is a second language, explained to my mother, the doctor wanted to seduce her. I asked for my 4-year-old, "What would you like to do today?" He shook his head and said, "I don't know, but I definitely do not want to do anything interesting." Redditors reveal the dimmest bulb they've encountered. A woman I know bragged on Facebook that she scored 84 on her IQ test. She thought that was out of 100. I had a guy proudly tell me that he could write with his left and right hand equally well. He said that was because he was amphibious. Toward the end of the movie King Kong, my then girlfriend asked, "Is this based on a true story?" I'd be fine with a ghost in the house if each time a bloody message appeared on the wall, it was something helpful like, Your keys are in the front door. Or you left the lights on in the bathroom. April Fool. In 1978, photographer Mark Gubin took a tub of white paint and wrote "Welcome to Cleveland" on his rooftop in block letters large enough to be read by airplane passengers about to land at the nearby airport. The sentiments, which are still there, I've actually seen a picture of this, were very kind except for one thing. Gubin lives in Milwaukee. Gubin doesn't have a good explanation when people ask why he did what he did, as he told a reporter at TMJ4 in Milwaukee. I say, it's because it was Wednesday. While my friend and I were waiting in the Ritz-Carlton lobby, we spotted the opera great Andrea Bocelli. My friend was so excited that he ran up to Mr. Bocelli, grabbed his hand, and started pumping it vigorously, all the while proclaiming, "I'm a huge fan of yours, Mr. Pavarotti." Thankfully, Mr. Bocelli saw the uniform, considering it's the humor. Mr. Bocelli saw the humor. That's interesting, because Mr. Bocelli is blind. I once attended a wedding on short notice. My wife signed the card for us, and because they were in my friends, she accidentally addressed it to the bride and their cat, because I had talked about their cat more than I had with my friend. Sorry, my pages just stuck together. There we go. We found a fix. Helps, hacks, and how-tos. Gardening. Rearrange outdoor plants. You've been waiting all winter, your garden is finally blooming again, and you wish you could move that rooted perennial tree 3 feet to the left. To make it easier to shuffle things around, buy a bunch of empty planting pots, all the same size, then place your new vegetation in doubled-up pots instead of directly on the ground. If you want to rearrange, just pull out the top pot with the plant inside and plop in a different one instead. This makes it easier to bring plants indoors in the winter, too. Good idea. For home, a sure-find stud finder. When using a stud finder, first hold it up to yourself to make sure it's working. If not, or if you just can't find a stud finder, pick up your that's terrible. Pick up your measuring tape. Most use large red numbers, black diamonds, triangles, or arrows to signify the distance between studs. Start at the wall corner. At any spot a signifier lands on, should have a stud underneath. Don't believe us? Notice they all fall on multiples of 16. The number of inches apart the studs are typically spaced for interior walls. Number 3, tech. Turn email into a time capsule. Don't let every photo, video, and memory of your new baby or grandchild exist only in your phone. Create a special email address and send every photo, achievement, and memory to that address, logging in every few months so the account isn't closed for inactivity. When the young one is old enough to share the password to the electronic baby book you made. Number 4, career. Separate work from home while working from home. If you're a member of the new remote workforce, it's an easy slip to help you focus. Use one internet browser for official business and a different one for your downtime. This way, shopping sites and social media won't distract you when you're trying to focus, helping you end the workday more quickly so you can make your happy hour in the club living room. Number 5, food. Keep foods fresher longer. If your groceries always spoil before you finish them, it's time for a 180. After opening a jar of spaghetti sauce or anything you want to finish later, put it back in the fridge upside down. Inverting jars creates a vacuum that slows the growth of food-spoiling bacteria. Just make sure the lid is sealed tightly before flipping it. That is a cool idea. I've never heard that one. Number 6. Travel. A booking trick for cheaper one-way fares. Do you want to be a part of it, New York, New York, but can't swing Big Apple plane fare? Try booking a one-way ticket that connects there, say to Columbus, then just get off in New York and stay off. Airline logarithms charge more for direct flights into a high-cost destination than connecting flights to low-cost ones, says Lee McMillan, CEO of Peak Season, a job-hunting site for avid travelers. It only works for one-way trips, but it is applicable to most high-cost destinations, not just the city that never sleeps. Number 7, pets. Save a hallway runner from a four-legged runner. Has your dog been diagnosed with an incurable case of the zoomies, with side effects such as constantly disheveling the living room rug? Does your cat think it's endlessly fun to mess up bath mat day after day? There's a simple, secure solution. Velcro the corners of your rugs and mats to the floor to keep them from rumpling. No matter how much your pets or kids gallop across them, that way the rug will stay in place whenever the turbulence, but is still easily removable when it's time to clean. Number 8, health. the case for deodorizing at night. If you typically apply antiperspirant in the morning before heading out to interact with others, we appreciate and salute you. But you should actually swipe it on before bed. Antiperspirant keeps underarms dry by temporarily plugging sweat pores. Since you're sweating less overnight, you absorb more antiperspirant than you would rushing around in the morning, making it much more effective. How about a little humor in uniform? And there's a cartoon here of two sailors saluting a bunch of GNUs, shooting off things, and it says, so the memo said 21 GNU salute, huh? G-N-U instead of G-U-N. That doesn't translate very well. Sorry about that. My third grader's teacher assigned the following prompt. Veterans Day honors the men and women who have served in the armed forces. Do you think you would like to serve in the military one day? And explain why. Here is Justin's response. Yes, I would like to serve in the military someday. I would like to serve chocolate chip ice cream, strawberry chocolate, and vanilla ice cream. I would ask, what kind of flavor would you like? I'd also ask, what kind of cone do you like? That's what I would like to serve in the military. At the Marine Corps Officers Candidate School, an instructor told us how all the physical training they would put us through would come in handy once we left the service. When we get through with you, he said, you should be able to whip any civilian in a fight. And if you can't do that, you can surely outrun them. And having been through Officer Candidate School in the Marine Corps, I will agree. However, then you get old and fat, and it doesn't work very well. And with that, we're going to switch over to Consumer Reports. And last week, we had a thing on Costco chickens, and we didn't get to finish all the letters in response to that, so here's a couple more. Who cares if Costco chicken is good for you or not? It's clearly not good for chickens. Given your acknowledgement that even so-called humanely raised chickens are subject to crowded conditions and bright lights for 20 hours a day, I'm surprised your ultimate recommendation wasn't stop eating grocery store chicken. The nutrients we need in order to thrive can be obtained more healthily, humanely, and from environmentally responsible plant sources. There are various marvelous vegan versions of virtually every type of food imaginable, including vegan chicken. Win, win, win. Mary Finelli, of course. In my house, Costco's affordable food is loved, especially in preparation of Eastern North Carolina soul food, chicken and pastry, a.k.a. chicken slicks, where the salty chicken adds the exact amount of flavoring. And since I just had chicken slicks for dinner last night, that's kind of interesting. Regarding Save Big on Great New Printer, I own an Epson TC2750 and have found it to be an excellent printer with only one fault. In my case, I got an expensive doorstop at about 12,000 pages, 3 years of use. To have Epson fix it is neither cheap nor easy nor quick. Their authorized repair facilities are few and far between. Editor's note, long-lasting products are important. That's why when we rate printers, we factor in a brand's predicted reliability score based on survey feedback from printer owners. These scores estimate the likelihood that a newly purchased model from a given brand will develop problems in the first 4 years. Digital and all-access members can see our reliability raters at cr.org/printer0322. Keeping kitchen knives sharp. Thank you for your report on kitchen knives. However, even the best knife eventually needs to be resharpened. Yet you did not include ratings for which sharpeners to use. Any suggestions? And this is from Rabbi Chiam Kosper. Editor's note, our staffers are currently working on reviews of a number of knife sharpeners, which we hope to publish in an upcoming issue. In the meantime, you can go to cr.org/sharpener0222 and our advice on how to choose the best type of knife sharpener for your need. Road Report. Staying safer in the back seat. Introducing CR's new rear seat safety score, which reveals the cars that work hardest to prevent injuries for those who sit in the back. Which obviously are probably a lot of our listeners. Car buyers have studied safety ratings for years to determine the level of protection a vehicle offers occupants in a crash. Until recently, those ratings largely focused on the people sitting up front. Safety groups and crash testers have recently turned their attention to the rear seat as well. In September 2021, Consumer Reports released its first ever rear seat ratings safety ratings so car buyers can compare rear seat safety across 35 popular new vehicles. Later this winter, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, IIHS, an independent safety research group sponsored by auto insurance companies, plans to issue results from its new rear seat crash test. The first time results of a frontal crash test with a dummy in the rear seat will be published for U.S. car buyers. These developments will make it easier for car buyers to determine which vehicles are best at protecting passengers and also encourage automakers to improve rear seat safety so that future vehicles might perform better in new crash tests. The new focus addresses a safety imbalance that can leave some passengers at greater risk depending on where they're sitting in a car, says Emily Thomas, Ph.D., Automotive Safety Program Manager at Consumer Reports. The rear seat has to take into account all kinds of passengers who sit there, from infants and teens to adults and ride-hailing passengers of all ages, she says. But our analysis shows that many automakers don't include the same safety features for rear seats as they do for the front. Evaluating rear seat reminders. Even though nearly all new cars have audible alarms that remind front seat occupants to buckle up, only about 30% of CR-rated vehicles have those reminders for rear seat occupants, according to a National Highway Traffic Safety Administration database. There are many reasons why rear passengers might not buckle up, but a dinging chime might encourage them to rethink that decision. That's why CR and IIHS are now evaluating vehicles to see if they have rear beat reminder systems and how to judge how well they work. Our ratings tell you which vehicles have the reminders to get full credit. A reminder system must have an audible warning that escalates if a rear passenger fails to buckle up after a trip starts. Wear your seatbelt. Any improvement to rear safety seats starts with a simple wearing your seatbelt, your first line of defense in a crash. No matter where you sit or what level of safety technology a vehicle has. But in a 2016 IIH survey, only 72% of passengers reported wearing their seatbelts in the rear seat, compared with 91% in the front passenger seat. The problem is worsened for in-hire vehicles such as Uber, Lyft, and taxis, where only 57% of rear seat passengers reported always buckling up. It's a sobering statistic considering that in a crash, unbelted rear occupants have nearly an 8 times higher risk of suffering serious injury than belted rear seat occupants, according to a 2015 study. In a crash, unbuckled passengers can also become dangerous projectiles and put others in the car at risk, says Jessica Jeremakian, Vice President for Vehicle Research at IIHS. Even if you're buckled, but the passenger next to you is not buckled, that can add risk to everyone in the vehicle, she says. Rear seat risks. When researchers from IIHS examined typical rear occupant injuries from real-world crashes, they found that one of the most common ones involved the chest. Although serious chest injuries are relatively uncommon, technology is available to reduce the risk even further. This includes pretensioners, which pull seat belts tighter at the beginning of a crash, and load limiters, which let the seat belt spool out a little during crash to lower the risk of chest injury by reducing the force the belt applies to the occupant's chest. Although these features are common on front seats, only about 40% of Main Street 2021 vehicles have model year vehicles have pretensioners and load limiters in the back seat. Based on CR's tally from NHTSA's public database of vehicle safety features. Despite the importance of the equipment, it can be difficult for consumers to tell if a vehicle comes with pretensioners and load limiters. CR's rear seat safety ratings make it clear if one or both are present in the new vehicles we evaluate. Concerns for older adults. Rear seat passengers over the age of 55 are especially susceptible to chest injuries in a crash. That's because their bones may break more easily compared with younger, healthier occupants, says Jingwen Yu, Associate Director of the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. If you add the same force to the chest, older occupants may have several rib fractures. In frontal crashes, rear seat occupants are also susceptible to submarining, which means when a passenger slides beneath the lap belt, sometimes causing injury to the soft tissue above the pelvis. This can be due to seat design, but it can also result from wearing a seat belt improperly. Better tests, safer cars. Until recently, only side impact crash rating tests in the U.S. were conducted with a dummy sitting in the rear, leaving car buyers in the dark about how rear seat passengers might fare in a frontal crash. Now IIHS has added a dummy in the rear seat of its latest round of moderate overhaul front lights crash, which reflect what happens when a car has partial head-on collision with a barrier or another vehicle. Small SUVs were tested first, and midside SUVs are next. By 2024, after more categories of vehicles are tested, IIHS plans to start using rear seat crash test results as one of the qualifying factors for its TOF safety pick designation. In the short term, experts at IIHS and CR hope that the new safety ratings will encourage car manufacturers to make simple changes to improve safety, Jamaican expects load limiters and pretensioners to become commonplace in rear seats as automakers deploy existing technology to improve rear seat crash test scores. If dummy submarine during crash tests, automakers might redesign seat structures that prevent those kinds of injuries in real-world collisions. These are all things that haven't been addressed by frontal crash programs in the past, so automakers haven't had to focus on them, Jamaican says. In the longer term, she and CR's Thomas says that car buyers should expect to see new technologies emerge that specifically address rear seat passenger safety. For example, our analysis shows that over 25% of new vehicles have side airbags specifically designed to protect the pelvis and torso of rear occupants, a figure Thomas expects will grow. A handful of vehicles already have inflatable seat belts, which Yu says may help prevent chest injuries by spreading out the force the belt puts on the chest during crash. And a Mercedes already has a rear seat airbag available on the S-Class sedan. It's likely that these advanced technologies will show up first as options on higher-priced vehicles, but will eventually end up in mainstream cars, Thomas says. As groups such as IIHS and CR focus on rear seat safety, and added attention could spark stronger federal policies. Currently, NHTSA has yet to add rear seat safety ratings to its 5-star crash test program, the results of which are printed on new vehicle window stickers. It's long overdue for NHTSA to strengthen its 5-star ratings, which haven't seen a major updates in more than a decade, says William Wallace, CR's manager of safety policy. NHTSA should seize the opportunity presented by new technologies when the agency updates its ratings, and should fully account for all how well a car protects people's safety in the rear seats as well as the front. CR's rear seat safety scores. These are some of the features CR's engineers evaluate to calculate our rear seat safety score. Head restraints. The restraints can prevent whiplash and other neck injuries during a rear-end collision. We give points if restraints are tall enough to provide sufficient protection to adult passengers, including those who sit in the middle seat. Head restraints that don't require adjustment score better. To improve rearward visibility or help a seat fold flat, some rear head seat restraints can be stowed or removed when the rear seat is not in use. But seats without head restraints put passengers at an increased risk of injury, so we give points to vehicles that make it difficult for anyone to sit in a rear seat without a properly positioned or installed head restraint. Advanced restraints. We award points to cars with rear seat belt pretensioners and load limiters, which have been found to reduce injuries and save lives for front seat passengers. We also award points for belts with height adjustable upper anchors, which can improve belt fit. Rear airbags. As part of our advanced rear restraint evaluation, we award points to vehicles with airbags that offer side impact torso and pelvis protection to rear occupants. Only about a quarter of new vehicles have these features today. In the future, our ratings will add points for rear airbags designed for frontal impact or that protect rear occupants seated on the side of the vehicle opposite the crash impact, features that are not yet available in most mainstream vehicles. Belt binders. Nearly all new cars warn front seat occupants to buckle up, but only some provide the same warning for rear seat passengers. We give the most points to reminder systems that persist until a seat belt is buckled and that start to chime if a passenger unbuckles during a trip. Kids in the back. Children 12 and under should always sit in the back seat. Here's how CR's rear seat safety scores take their needs into account. Rear occupant alert. On the average, 39 children die each year in hot cars, according to the advocacy group kidsincars.org. We evaluate warning systems to help prevent these deaths. Some cars can even sense if a person is left behind when a car is locked. Car seat fit. An improperly installed car seat may not fully protect a child, so we rate every vehicle we test on the ease of installation for infant and convertible seats. We check latch, L-A-T-C-H, accessibility, to see how many seats can fit across the vehicle's second row, and evaluate the installation instructions of the vehicle's owner manual. Booster seats. We also check to see how easy it is to fit a high-back booster seat, whether it blocks as to the belt in an adjacent seat, if it stays in place, how easy kids can buckle themselves, and if the rear head restraint interferes with installation. How you can maximize safety. There are some things all passengers can do to make the most of any vehicle's rear seat safety features. It starts with buckling up, even on short strips or in a four-hire vehicle, says Emily Thomas, Ph.D., Automotive Safety Program Manager at CR. All the safety technology in the world is useless if you're unbelted, she says. Make sure your belt fits properly. Your shoulder belt should cross over the center of your collarbone. Some cars have an adjustable upper belt anchor on the door pillar, so look for one and adjust it for the best fit. CR gives credit to our rear seat safety score to vehicles that have this feature. You don't want to be unbelted or leaning away from a belt because it's uncomfortable, Thomas says. Your lap belt should be low enough to hug your hip bones, which are stronger than the soft areas of your abdomen. In a crash, a proper lap belt can prevent submarining when a vehicle's occupant body slides forward and under the lap belt. Adjust your head restraint so that its top lines up with the top of your head, or at least the top of your ears. When adjusting the seat back, leave it more than 4 inches between the back of your head and the restraint. When choosing where to sit, passengers should find the seat where the belt has the most comfortable fit, and then, if possible, make any adjustments. Sit where you can wear your belt properly throughout the entire car ride, Thomas says. CR's new rear seat safety ratings explained. Finding out which car's various safety features in the back seat can be difficult, if not impossible, for consumers. So she and other engineers at CR's Auto Test Center perform detailed evaluations, tap data assesses, and work with automakers to tally which cars offer rear seat safety features. From that tally and from the results of our child safety test, we develop CR's new rear seat safety score. As we collect more data, our ratings will expand to include more vehicles. The current list of vehicles we've scored is on the facing page, which we'll look at in a second. The message from our new rear seat safety testing is not that vehicles with lower scores are unsafe, but they do not offer the same comparative margin of protection as those vehicles that earn higher marks. Winners and losers. So far, no new vehicles got top ratings across all our scored categories for rear seat safety. That will likely change, says Jennifer Stockberger, Director of Operations at CR's Auto Test Center, who oversees the program. Automakers often update their vehicles in order to meet more stringent safety evaluations, she says. In our first review, a few results in vehicles were particularly noteworthy. The Jennison Braggs lies behind. Although the GV70 SUV features the first-of-its-kind radar-based rear occupant alert, it fails to offer more basic rear occupant protection. For example, no Genesis sedan or SUV has advanced rear restraints. A spokesman for Hyundai and Genesis told CR that the automakers are reviewing advanced rear restraints and are committed to making these features standard. Some vehicles designed to carry lots of passengers scored poorly, including the Jeep Grand Cherokee L, the Hyundai Santa Fe, and the Hyundai Tucson SUVs, and the Kia Carnival minivan. None of these newly redesigned vehicles had advanced rear restraint systems or rear belt reminders. Spokespeople for Jeep and Kia said their companies would not discuss plans for their cars. Some affordable and popular vehicles scored well. The Toyota Sienna minivan, Honda Civic sedan, the Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, and Ford Bronco Sport SUVs all got very good rear seat scores. So does the popular Ford F-150 XLT pickup truck. Okay, let's look at the standards. Getting safer in the back. Our new scores, which include safety features, come standard on the new cars and trucks and SUVs that we have recently tested for rear seat safety. And let's give you the highest. And the highest score is a 69. Looks like there's about 8 that got the green score, so to speak, in the 60s. The Toyota Sienna 2021 got a 69. It has got a good rating for child seat fit, booster use, and rear occupant alert. It got the same green. I'm going to not run through these because they're kind of complicated. But anyway, I'll let you know if there's any of them that got a real downer. The Nissan Pathfinder from 2022 got a 66. The Honda Civic for 2022 got a 66. The Nissan Rogue for 2021 got a 66. And that's enough. I happen to own one of those. Ford Bronco Sport 2021 got a 61. Cadillac Escalade got a 61. 2021 got a 61, but it also got a negative on advanced rear seat restraints, but an absolute best score on rear head restraints. The Ford X50 XLT got a 61. The Ford Mustang Mach-E 2021 got a 61. Now, the rest of these got either high 50s or low 40s. The Toyota Venza for 2021, the Mitsubishi Outlander for 2022, the Toyota RAV4 Prime for 2021, the Acura MDX for 2022 also got a hard down on the rear belt reminder, and the Lexus IS300 for 2021 got a hard down on the rear occupant alert and also on the rear head restraints. Chevrolet Tahoe, Chevrolet Suburban, Chevrolet Trailblazer, the Kia KS, the Kia Sorento, the Buick Envision, the Polestar 2, and the Genesis GV80, all from 2021, all got 40s, from a high of 48 to a low of 41. The following scores are very low. Jeep Grand Cherokee for 2021, the Kia Carnival for 22, Hyundai Santa Fe for 21, Chevrolet Bolt for 2022, the Genesis GV70 for 2022, the Kia Seltos for 21, the Hyundai Tucson for 2022, the Hyundai Santa Cruz for 2022, the Mercedes GLA, which is kind of a surprise, but it got three hard downs for 2021, the Volkswagen Taos for 2022, Hyundai Elantra 21, Hyundai Ioniq 2021, Acura TLX for 2021, and the Genesis G80 for 2021 all got 20s. Now, interesting enough, the most hard downs are rebuilt reminders and advanced hearing restates. And just about everybody from 47 down got negative marks on that particular score. How to get a fair deal on a car. Car shopping over the past year has been a wild ride. Pandemic-related supply chain problems have thinned the selection of vehicles on dealer lots and driven prices higher than usual, sometimes well above the manufacturer's suggested retail price, MSRP. Even used cars aren't a bargain these days, with sale prices at record levels. Why are deals so hard to find? It all comes down to supply and demand. Some people can't put off buying a new car and are willing to pay more than the sticker price to get what they want. The highly rated and sought-after Kia Telluride, for example, has sold an average at about 17% above its MSRP for the past several months, according to CR's most recent data. The Kia Sorento, Chevrolet Trailblazer, and new Ford Maverick are among the many other models that have recently been selling at prices 15% or more above their sticker. Several models on the market were recently being purchased for less than MSRP, but these are usually not as sought after or as expensive to begin with, or are lacking in performance or other key characteristics. For instance, the BMW 740i xDrive, recommended by CR, is being discounted by up to 5% on average, but it starts at over $85,000. Other models such as the Alfa Romeo Stelvio, the BMW X2, and the Volvo S90 are also selling at a discount, but are not recommended by CR. While you're not likely to get a great deal on most cars these days, relative savings can still be found on worthy choices. CR's data shows that a handful of models have been selling at or close to MSRP and are comparable to some of the cars people are paying far too much for. Let somebody else shell out thousands over sticker for a Telluride while you avoid paying that hefty premium by choosing a comparable Honda Pilot instead. The key is to be flexible and, above all, informed. To help you get a fair price on a good car and avoid falling for a great deal on a bad car, remember these tips. Don't expect an awesome deal. There aren't enough cars to satisfy demand these days, so the great deals that were common early in the pandemic are over. Now a good price is measured by how close the transaction number is to the MSRP. But if you do your research, you can get a price that's at or maybe even slightly below the MSRP. Beware of discounts. Most of the cars with the deepest discounts right now are either very expensive to begin with or not very good cars. Don't get stuck with something you'll regret buying. And use CR's expert reviews and ratings. Get your own word in there. Consumer Reports expert review and reliability data can steer you towards competitive models that are least likely to give you problems in the future. And our online model pages give you local transaction prices you can use as a guide. Make the whole process even easier by using CR's Build and Buy car buying service to lock in a competitive price from home. And for a change in subject, what we're testing in our labs. In our 63 labs, we continue to review and rate products. Here are timely picks for this month. Big screen smartphones. We tested 49 models. We test for quality of the display, including color, clarity, and touch responsiveness, quality of front and rear cameras, use of battery life, and more. The median, about the scores, the median was 73, the range was 47 to 86. The highest was 86, was the durable display and long battery life, and a 6.7-inch screen is the Apple iPhone 13 Pro Max at $1,100. The top Android phone with a great camera and a 6.9-inch screen, Galaxy Note 20 Ultra 5G at $1,200. Nice price for an excellent large display. 6.6 screen is OnePlus 8 for $450. And that got an 83. So we have an 86, 85, and 83. Drip coffee makers under $100. We tested 55 models. We test for a coffee maker's ability to reach optimal brewing temperatures, 195 Fahrenheit to 205 degrees Fahrenheit. Ease of cleaning and changing filters, pouring without drips, and more. The median score was 69. The range was 36 to 88, which is a pretty big spread. Best brew performance was the Ninja 12-Gup Programmable CE201 coffee maker at $80. That got an 84 overall score. The excellent no-drip carafe with the Cuisinart Brew Central DCC 1200 at $95, which got an 81. The easy-to-use bargain was the Bella 1475 at $40, got an 80 overall score. My coffee maker overflows. What am I doing wrong? First, make sure you're not using too much water. You should always stay under the reservoir's maximum fill line. Don't overdo the coffee grounds either. Leave at least half an inch between them and the top of the filter basket. Then check the filter itself. If the strainer is dirty, it won't let water pass through quickly enough. If you're using a paper filter, make sure it's fully open and in the proper position. If not, it could become a roadblock for water. In our labs, we've also seen that some coffee makers are simply more prone to overflowing than others when brewing a full pot. Members can look at the highs and lows to see if a model overflows in our tests. Mattresses under $500. Oh, we got coffee to wake up and mattresses to sleep on. That's interesting. They tested 13 models for durability, support for side and back sleepers, whether petite, average, or large, tall, and size, firmness on a scale of 1 to 10, and more. About the scores, the median was 67, the range was 49 to 74. The 74 was the best bed for a low price with spa sensations by Zinus 12, TheraTouch, $430, and that's a foam mattress. The next one was a 71, which is also a foam mattress, Sleep Innovations Shiloh 14-inch memory foam, $470. An excellent for smaller back sleepers, Sealy Responsive Essentials 10-inch inner spring at $380, got a 68. Window laptops. We tested 117 models. We test for the ability to run large applications smoothly, quality of display, ergonomics, including the keyboard, battery life, and more. About the scores, the median was 68, the range was 21 to 91. Touchscreen with superb performance, a 15.6-inch screen, was a Samsung Galaxy Book Pro 360 at $1,500. That did score an 85. Lightweight big screen from a reliable brand. A 16-inch screen, LG Gram 16 2021, was $1,200, and that scored an 81. Extra portable and long battery life, 14-inch screen, was the Acer Swift SF314 for $770, and that got a 74. Multi-cookers. We tested 24 models. We test for how well it steams broccoli and baby carrots, sautés onions, cooks rice, pressure cooks ribs and chili, ease of use, and more. About the scores, the median was 76, the high range was 67 to 82, so they all scored pretty much in the same range. Best for steaming veggies was the Savora Lux LCD Z-Cell 02 6-quart for $160. That scored an 82. Large capacity with built-in air frying function was the Instant Pot Duo Crisp 11-inch, 11-in-1, 8-quart with air fryer, $140, 2021, $200. That scored an 81. Non-stick and great for sautéing, the Blue Diamond Weekday Wonder 16-in-1, 6-quart, $130, and that scored an 80. Treadmills. We tested 35 models. I wonder how great they are for hanging your clothes on when you don't use them. Ease of use, ergonomics, including belt and handrail design, sturdiness instruction, safety controls, and more. About the scores, the median is 81, the range was 51 to 88. The score of 87 was True Performance 100 non-folding. That was only $4,200. Easy-to-use folding treadmill, the Orizon Fitness 7.4 AT at $1,600, and that scored the same score as the $4,000 one of 87. In 84 was the folding treadmill best buy was the Nautilus T616 at $1,100. That scored an 84. I know an electric car will save me money on gas, but what about repairs and insurance? A CR study published in 2020 found that overall electric vehicles cost less to own than the equivalent gas-powered vehicles. thanks to lower repair and maintenance costs. That's partly because EVs have fewer moving parts, as well as savings on fuel. In fact, our survey of hundreds of thousands of CR members showed that drivers of EVs and plug-in hybrids paid half as much to repair and maintain their vehicles on an average, savings of $4,600 in repair and maintenance costs over the life of the vehicle, 15 to 16 years. Most EV owners, however, do not pay higher insurance premiums than owners of gas-powered cars. Lynn McChristian, Director of the Office of Risk Management Insurance Research at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, says that's most likely because insurers don't have decades of risk assessment data for EVs. That means they're less able to accurately gauge the risk of theft or damage after a crash, and they factor that ambiguity into a higher premium. Fortunately for consumers, elevated insurance premiums for EVs are likely to trend downward as companies collect more data and more models come to market. McChristian says the share of EVs being sold in the U.S. is still relatively small, at just 4% of all vehicles in 2021, but the number has been growing each year. How about we close out with all in a day's work? Negotiations were at a standstill, so we took a break to let temper simmer down. As my team and I stepped outside, I tripped and fell face down concrete steps, ripping my blouse and bloody my arm and chin. When we returned to our client's office, he looked alarmed. "What happened to you?" My coworker had answered, "She recommended we accept your last offer." A woman approached me at the bank, wanting to buy a savings bond for her granddaughter, who was being baptized. Not sure how much she wanted to spend, I asked, "What denomination?" She replied, "Protestant." The Journal Annuals of Improbable Research awards the annual Ig Nobel Prize in recognition of some very well yet very willed achievements in science, politics, and more. In 2020, the Ig Nobel Peace Prize went to the governments of India and Pakistan for an activity one might call diplomatic ding-dong ditch, in which diplomats ring each other's doorbells in the middle of the night and run away before anyone has a chance to answer. For 2021, the Peace Prize went to American researchers for testing the hairy hypothesis that humans evolved beards to protect themselves from punches to the face. Scene. Bookstore. I answer the phone. "Hi. This is Bookstore. Can I help you?" "Yes. Do you have Ulysses in stock?" "We have it in paperback and hardcover. Do you want to make a reservation?" "What's the author's name?" "It's James Joyce. J-A-M-E-S-J-O-Y-C-E. 10 letters. Thank you. I'm doing a crossword and I needed the answer to this." Click. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Thanks so much for listening, and so long until next time.